Well, friends, I really did it. We have two marvelous audio recordings for Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 14. Somehow I did not press show my screen. Well, okay, what this means is that I have to do again what I have just done, and however, I will almost never repeat myself, so perhaps there is some value in the audio of number 14 that I've just completed, and coming discussion, this time the screen is definitely on. Yes, I'm showing the screen, and I'll never do that one again, right? Never say never. We began by saying that there were some great remote sources which were affecting our solar system, and that these were the Great Bear, the Pleiades, and Sirius, the so-called intimate constellations, as well as the seven solar systems. Whether the seven solar systems are simply solar logoi in a cosmic logos called the seven solar systems, of which ours is one, sometimes called the Sirian system, or whether these seven solar systems are really great constellational sources, the major chakras of the one about whom naught may be said. But in any case, they do reach into our solar system, and the human being cannot register them. The analogy given is that for a human being to register these impacts would be equivalent to a tiny cell or atom in our little finger registering consciously the effect of a high moment of meditation that we may have. So perhaps we can see something of the proportion involved here. Even the soul cannot register these great impacts. It has to be the spirit itself. And man has to be coming into the third initiation and beyond in order for this type of registration simply to begin. He tells us that there are all these energies, there's a vast system of interlocking energies. Our little systemic etheric body is part of the etheric body of a cosmic logos. We cannot really trace these things, but we can have some idea about them. And when the Antikorana is built sufficiently to warrant the idea that we are third degree initiates, some slight impression from these sources will begin. DK wants to consider the major forces involved here. They will suffice for our day and generation, and increasingly we will become aware. Well, that's where I ended number 13 and began the ill-fated voyage blind on number 14. But I can see already that I'm not going to be saying the same thing, so, you know, perhaps it will be useful to listen to number 14 blind as well as number 14 with visuals. So he's commenting in a broad way, with a great sweep. He always has reservations because there are always particulars which do not fit within the generality. I remember once he was discussing there are three major types of second-ray souls, of course, with many exceptions. Okay, well, it may help for us to know that there is principally the wisdom type, the pure love type, and the meticulous entirety type, but there are many exceptions. So he is certainly in that position to see and understand what some of these are. So here is the broad sweep of what different types of human beings respond to. Undeveloped humanity is primarily conditioned in its life and circumstance by the influence of the lesser zodiac and thus by the position of the planets in the 12 houses. It's interesting to call the arrangement of the 12 houses a kind of zodiac. It's kind of a circumstantial, experiential zodiac, a zodiac of influences within the realm of dense form considered to be within the dense physical body of the solar logos. So the early man, undeveloped humanity, solar plexus humanity, living below the diaphragm, is responding primarily and automatically to the influence of the planets in the houses. And we do too, of course. But he'll explain that in a short while here. I've done a lot of these today. So some of them with futility. it may be necessary, after all, to send you number 11 and 12, truncated 12, an hour and 49 minutes of it, and a rather large file, which Mac readers, Mac users cannot use, but let us see. We're working on it. Now, average intelligent humanity and those nearing the path of discipleship and upon the probationary path, so this is a category of humanity existing after millions of years of evolution. Remember, there's kind of a ballpark figure there that under normal circumstances it will take 25 million years to make the master from the time of individualization. I mean, that may be a preposterous figure, but I think it bears some examination given the fact that 21 million years have passed for most of humanity, and they are where they are, perhaps some millions of years away from becoming a true master. So, average intelligent humanity, they have some grip on the concrete mind. There's some aspiration here on the probationary path. They're beginning to discipline themselves on the path of discipleship. They are influenced by what? Let us see. By the planets affecting their personalities. Indeed, we all have personalities, and at least until the fourth initiation is taken, and then even then, the spiritual triad is considered a personality of the monad. So these planets are still in play, even for the intelligent and those upon the path of probation. And they will be actually in play for initiates as well. There are ways in which the planets rule the fifth initiation, the fourth initiation, maybe beyond. So we cannot simply say that planetary influence represents only the lower stages of development. But as DK told us, it's the energies passing through the planets, the ray energies and other energies, which are influential in these higher degrees, along with the energy of the planet itself. So these intelligent people are affected. Sorry. By the planets. Yes, they are. They are affected by the sun sign, as indicating the trends which are already established and which constitute the line of least resistance. And I want to say the conscious line of least resistance. There are lines of least resistance about which we would be shocked because we have no idea that we are actually carrying out these types of activities. They are unconscious to us. But as we are born in the sign that we leave, at least that in which we leave life, or leave form in the lower three worlds, as we are born in the same month, as he says, or the same sign of the zodiac, as the sign of the zodiac in which we departed from the physical plane, we can see that there is a kind of developmental trend that moves with the sun. In other words, there's a constructiveness that operates in relation to the sun. So whatever we had built, when we departed the physical plane is continued by the sun's position, so it represents this constructive building of the personality and the character, and it is a line of least conscious resistance. In other words, we know what we like, we know what seems easiest to us, we know how we seem to fit with certain types of activities and circumstances. That is a conscious sense of the line of least resistance. Oftentimes when we follow our rising sign, we have to go against that line of least resistance. And so intelligent human beings, probationers and disciples, also respond to the rising sign. But it says in a small measure. You would think that as disciples they would respond in a larger measure to the rising sign. And let us remember that all human beings respond to the rising sign. It has a lot to do with the physical nature. And it is very much involved in what is called Hyleg, H-Y-L-E-G, or health indications in the astrological chart. And in a way, it does rule the dense physical body. So there's a whole range of possible expression of the rising sign. But from its higher and spiritual perspective, the intelligent person, the aspirant, the disciple, are responding to it in a spiritual way. And in small measure, perhaps, compared to what the higher disciple can elicit from the rising sign. This rising sign, and this is very interesting, indicates the life goal for that particular life cycle, or else over a period of seven lives. Now, I used to think, well, it's either one life or seven, or at least, you know, interpreting superficially, you would say it operates for one life or for seven lives. But the phrase over a period of shows that this rising sign can be kept for, let us say, a maximum of seven lives, but also for one life, two life, three, four, five, six, and so forth. We may have a repeated rising sign for a number of lives running, and I suppose this will be in the care of the solar angel, seeing what has to be built. We are told that the artist oftentimes has the same personality ray. What type of human being would sustain a rising sign for a number of lives? So this rising sign, responded to in small measure by the disciple, I guess it's hard to do, indicates the life goal for that particular life cycle, or else over a period of seven lives. We have to ask ourselves, you know, in terms of our life goal, how much does our life goal correspond with our particular rising sign? How much is this the case? Okay, the last two constitute the greater zodiac. And I think the greater zodiac is in the microcosmic sense. There are vast cosmic zodiacs. A zodiac of 10, for instance, which is in a way even greater than our zodiac of 12 constellations. And that zodiac of 10 is consisting of a number of the constellations which constitute the chakras of the one about whom not may be said. So when DK talks about the greater zodiac, he's doing it in the microcosmic sense. So the last two really are the sun sign and the rising sign. That is the greater zodiac microcosmically. The lesser zodiac then would be the planets per se in the houses, indicating circumstantial life, and not necessarily even a very high type of circumstantial life. If we talk about what's going on in the astral body and the mental body, that also is circumstance. It surrounds the point of consciousness, which is focused within the jewel and the lotus. Even the egoic lotus is circumstance, that which stands around. So let's call the microcosmic greater zodiac the sun sign and the rising sign. Now, we go to the next category, which is not so much the average disciple or the probationary disciple, but the higher disciple and initiate. Disciples and initiates can begin consciously to respond to all of the above influences, namely the planets in the houses and the sun sign and the rising sign, handling them constructively because they have a point of leverage and of observation from which to work. Plus, they respond as well to those potent yet infinitely subtle forces which pour into our solar system from the three major constellations listed above. Well, that word infinitely, you know, of course, it means extremely subtle. It doesn't, well, you know, what is infinitely anything? It's a figure of speech when we are discussing the scope of something beyond our reckoning, and yet still finite. These forces are still finite, though extremely subtle. So disciples can begin, especially initiates can begin, at the third degree to respond to the three intimate constellations. In the early stages, the response is in the subtler bodies, and the brain fails to register them. We are having all kinds of responses in our astral and mental and egoic bodies, which our physical brain fails to register. Perhaps it is an indication of initiation, the sensitization of the brain cells in such a way that they can begin to respond to these subtler influences, which are always there, but are finally brought through into conscious recognition on the physical plane. But as DK says, after the third initiation, there is a recognition of these very subtle influences right there in the physical brain and in our normal personality consciousness, which is lived upon the physical plane. Now he brings the subject back. He says, bringing the theme back to the subject of this treatise, which is that of the seven rays. This is, after all, the third volume of the treatise on the seven rays. He really wants to emphasize that because the rays, in a way, have a higher type of expression than astrology does. The rays are related to the second ray, which is the divine ray being developed in our solar system, and astrology is related to the third ray, or the primordial ray, which underwent development in the previous solar system and is now not so emphasized, though it is the foundation. So indeed it is the rays we are discussing, and I would point out that these rays have a close connection with the seven stars of the Great Bear. Now these are the, for practical purposes, the sources of the seven rays, though we could go all the way to the universal logos, the God of the entire cosmos, the cosmos in its entirety in all dimensions, and say there is a universal septenate surrounding this great deity, which is the ultimate source of the seven rays, but for practical purposes we say it's the seven major stars of the Great Bear. And, you know, their names, Al-Kaid or Benet Nash, that's Ray 1, and Mizar, but Alcor is also there, a secondary star, Mizar. And then Alioth, Ray 3, and Megrez, Ray 4, and Dubé, Ray 5, and Merek, Ray 6, and Phegda, Phegda, Ray 7. So those are the sources of the seven rays. I think I've spelled them out for you earlier, somehow in some way in this whole series of discussions. I will certainly spell them out. It's kind of a, you know, strange feeling doing this thing all over again, this time hoping that there is some video and that you can read the text, which is always a great help when thinking about these abstract concepts. So these rays have a close connection with the seven stars of the Great Bear. Again, always the four and the three as a secondary differentiation. Now, whether the four are on top and the three are on the bottom, or the three are on the top and the four on the bottom, depends on the context. When we're looking at the planes, we have four ethers superior to three planes which are part of the dense physical nature, whether of man or of a planetary logos. But when we're looking at the personality, the fourfold personality, personality, mind, emotions, body, or from another perspective, mental body, astral body, etheric body, physical body, then we have the four on the bottom and the threefold soul, consisting of the three aspects and the three types of petals, are the elevated three. So sometimes, you know, if you're looking at a square, the triangle is on top of the square. So there's a trinity on top of the square, and they do share one surface together, and perhaps that is the symbol of the third ray shared both above and below. Anyway, I would point out that the rays have a close connection with the seven stars of the Great Bear. The cup of the Big Dipper represents the vessel of form, rays 4, 5, 6, 7, the rays of attribute, and the handle of the Great Bear represents the rays of aspect, rays 1, 2, and 3, with the far end of the handle, or the far end of the tail, we can say, being ray 1. These rays are connected to the Great Bear and to the seven sisters of the Pleiades. Well, maybe there are 1,000 Pleiades. I think already over 800 have been identified. I have to check my astronomy on that, or someone has to check the astronomy. But there is a 1,000-petal lotus, as we call it, and it would be very interesting if there were correspondentially as many of these Pleiades as there are petals in the head center of man, because the Pleiades can possibly be considered the total head center of the one about whom naught may be said, our local supercosmic logos. Okay, and the seven sisters, well, maybe they are special among the Pleiades, or most brilliant as far as we are concerned, and maybe they represent in a way the jewel in the lotus in that great 1,000-petaled lotus. Every jewel is, in a way, sevenfold. It might have 8 radiations in a certain respect, but it is a seven-faceted jewel, and so the seven sisters might be found there. Although other theorists connect the Pleiades with the throat center of the one about whom naught may be said. What exactly it is, well, it certainly has a connection with a jewel-like structure, because it is called by some the jewel box, which would fit very well, and it's like a miniature dipper in a way. It has a connection with the stars of the Great Bear called the Big Dipper. So these rays have a connection with both the Pleiades and with the seven stars, the seven rishis of the Great Bear. The first constellation is the agent of positive force, will force, to the planetary logos, in fact, to all the planetary logoi. And the relayer, the Pleiades are the relayer of the negative aspects. We have the masculine Great Bear and the feminine Pleiades, and we do know that the Pleiades are always associated with form and with femininity, and the Great Bear with masculinity and with assertion and with the great masculine rishis, but they both really need each other and are related 7 to 7, with, in a way, a sevenfold little bear in between them. That sevenfold little bear, when you add the 3 sevens together, you get the 21, and taking the unit as a whole, you have the mystical number 22. I have talked about how the little bear can be considered a higher correspondence of Sirius and the Sirian constellation, which is our local constellation is sometimes called the Sirian constellation. In other words, the seven solar systems, of which ours is one, is sometimes called the Sirian constellation. There is therefore a direct interchange of energies between the lives of the seven planetary logoi, the major ones presumably, and the stupendous and unfathomable lives who inform these major constellations. Now, even the stars themselves are informed by stupendous and unfathomable lives, but just imagine what types of beings need the entire constellation of the Great Bear to manifest through. What type of being is that? What type of being needs the Seven Sisters as a whole to manifest through? They are certainly stupendous and unfathomable. And the planetary logoi are in this exchange. Now, you know, I don't know if I mentioned it before. Like I say, I realize that what I'm saying now has some points in common with what I just said when I failed to record the video, but in many ways it's quite different, and I'm emphasizing different points. So I think it would be profitable to listen to both. Just as there are seven major planetary logoi and a number of minor ones, 3 to 5, so perhaps within the Great Bear there are seven major stars with some non-sacred solar logoi involved there, or at least lesser, maybe 3 to 5. Maybe in the Pleiades we can also consider lesser or non-sacred Pleiades. I'm thinking that the non-sacred planets, the 5 of them of our solar system, 2 of them as yet undiscovered, may be relating to non-sacred solar logoi within the Great Bear and to non-sacred solar logoi within the Pleiades. Although, you know, just as there are going to be 12 sacred planets in our solar system, perhaps there are going to be 12 sacred rishis and 12 sacred Pleiades. It's simply a speculation, but we want to line the numbers up. Definitely we do know that there will be 12 sacred planets when Earth and Mars and Pluto and so forth become sacred planets, and when the 2 non-sacred but undiscovered planets veiled by the Sun and the Moon become sacred planets. So anyway, there are stupendous and unfathomable lives informing these constellations as a whole, and great lives informing the stars, which make up the constellations. Great interlocking triangles of force can be found existing between the 7 planets and the 2 groups of 7 stars each. Let's just call the sacred planets, each one is aligned with 1 rishi and 1 of the 7 of the 7 of the Pleiades, and these triangles are of momentous import. They are not understood by us at this time, but they, as DK now says, it will eventually be discovered that the innermost secret of astrological deduction, in the planetary sense, is connected with these sacred triangles. So if we want to know about the horoscope of our planet, we will want to know the particular connection with 1 star of the Great Bear and 1 star of the Pleiades, and that will tell us a great deal about the process through which our planetary logos is passing. So in the planetary sense, the innermost secret is connected with these stellar and triangles, 2 stars and 1 planet, and they in their turn are represented by the triangles shifting and changing, which can be constructed in connection with the 7 centers in the human being. So we have a reflection in our etheric body, which is very important. And what I think happens here is that in these triangles there's a positive force, there is a negative force, at least negative to the positive, and there is a kind of a planetary force. Well, certainly it seems to me the planet has to represent the, what can I call it, the third ray aspect. And the Pleiades, which are connected with cosmic Buddhi, also represent the second ray aspect, and the Great Bear, the first ray aspect. There is, on page 1162 of Cosmic Fire, a quotation which shows us that the Pleiades are indeed connected with the second ray and the Buddhic force, as well as with the third ray. It's talking of the energy centers of the solar logos, which are the planetary logoi. They form vast lotuses or wheels, at the center of which lies hidden that central cosmic life we call a planetary logos. The planetary logos, the monadic aspect of that being, within the lotus. He is the meeting place for two types of force, spiritual or logoic, which reaches him via the logoic lotus on cosmic mental planes. Through the egoic lotus of our solar logos on the higher cosmic mental plane, two types of force reach into the planetary logos. And these forces are from the seven rishis of the Great Bear on their own plane, which, according to the map on... It's chart number 5. I'm not exactly sure what page... Yeah, page 344. It's chart number 5, and it suggests that the rishis of the Great Bear are on the fourth or Buddhic cosmic plane, but I don't think that is accurate. I think, really, the cosmic atmic plane, I think, is their plane. And so I think these cosmic atmic forces of the Great Bear are reaching the planetary logos along with, secondly, it says, Buddhic force, which is transmitted via the seven sisters or the Pleiades from a constellation called the Dragon in some books, and from which has come the appellation the Dragon of Wisdom. Well, it's a huge, amazing kundalinic constellation, but it doesn't just have seventh ray and first ray. The Dragon apparently has seven second ray. Otherwise, the masters who in a tiny way reflect the greater dragon and who represent the second ray would not be called dragons of wisdom. And the planetary logoi, who are also dragons of wisdom and are expressing the will to love, would not be called dragons of wisdom if there were no second ray in this great constellation of the dragon. And that second ray goes right on through the Pleiades, who then therefore represent the middle or equilibrizing force, perhaps the soul force of the Pleiades is the second ray, and thereby can be connected in the human energy system with the second chakra, the Great Bear with the first chakra of the triangle, the Pleiades with the second chakra, and the planet concerned with the third chakra. There is in Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 1, page, let's say 41 approximately, that's 31, 41, a list of chakras which people serving along different lines express. For instance, Group 1 of telepathic communicators expresses the head, the heart, and the throat centers. Well, in this case, if we're looking for the analogy between Great Bear Pleiades planet, we might find that the Great Bear represents the head, as most normally it does. The Pleiades represent the heart center, and let us say perhaps the planet Saturn represents the throat center in the human being. We know that Saturn rules the throat center of disciples, and the Earth rules the throat center of more average people, but perhaps we can take this little reflective triangle in our little etheric system and say, yes, it somehow represents the great triangle involving Great Bear, Pleiades, and a planet. And remember, the innermost astrological deduction, how does he put it? The innermost secret of astrological deduction is represented by these great cosmic triangles. So maybe there is a secret of astrological deduction for the human being involved in the chakra triangles, within the etheric body, within the astral body and also in the mental body. Let's take a look at group number two. The head, heart, and solar plexus, these are the observers of reality, those who are involved in the dissipation of glamour. The head, let us say, is the Great Bear. The heart is representing the Pleiades, in this case, and the solar plexus, either Mars or Neptune, but let us say Neptune, keeping it in the sacred planets. Then we have the healing group, the head, heart, and ajna centers. In this case, the head and the heart, again, are the Great Bear and the Pleiades, with the ajna center representing, let us say, either Venus or Mercury, either fifth ray or fourth ray, depending upon the level of evolution. Mercury at the ajna center is higher than Venus at the ajna center. Group four are the educators, the head, ajna, and throat centers. In this case, the head would be the Great Bear. It seems we always have the head center involved in these particular triangles. That doesn't mean there are not significant triangles within the etheric body that do not include the head center. But, you know, we're using this as an example. How can we find triangles within our own nature which somehow reflect these great triangles which hold the innermost secret of astrological deduction? So we have the Great Bear as the head, the Pleiades as the ajna, and probably Saturn as the throat center. Or, you know, we could possibly turn this around. But I like the idea that the two highest of the centers are represented by the Great Bear and the Pleiades, with the Pleiades having kind of an intermediary function, not just a material function, but a second-ray Buddhic mediating function. Group five are the political workers, head, heart, and base of the spine. We would have the Great Bear head, the Pleiades at the heart, and, well, base of the spine center is ruled by Pluto, is ruled by the Earth systemically, and by Pluto in terms of the microcosm. So it could be indeed Pluto. Is there a sacred planet we can associate with the base of the spine? Well, we can associate Mercury and the Kundalini with the base of the spine. Mercury represents Kundalini active and the Mars Kundalini latent. Then number six is the same as group number two. It's the religious workers, head, heart, and solar plexus, and we would give it the same kind of assignment, Great Bear, Pleiades, and let us say Neptune. And then the seventh group is a scientist, the last ones that have only three. We won't get into those that represent four because we are talking about triangles rather than rectangles or squares. So the head, the heart, the head, the throat, and the sacral center for the scientists, scientific workers, Great Bear again, Pleiades of the throat, and sacral center, well, shall it be Uranus? That is the sacred planet which represents the sacral center, although we can certainly connect the moon, we can connect Mars, even early Venus in some respect. All of the planets, in a way, are to be found in every chakra, just as upon this chakra that we call the Earth, all of the planets are represented in all the zodiacal signs. All right, so that gives us an idea of how we can look for triangles within the etheric system first, which may somehow represent, in a very microcosmic way, these great macrocosmic triangles. And, you know, the real evolution of a human being has to do with what's going on in those chakras. How are they stimulated? How are they related? Are they in the proper adjustment? So that when we're trying to get the most out of our horoscope, we can certainly study our etheric system and see what in the horoscope gives us a hint as how to increase the effectiveness of that system. In casting the horoscope of the planet, which will someday be possible, it may be ages away from now, in the great astrological department of hierarchy, they can do this, and I believe the Tibetan can do this as well, because he tells us that Libra is growing in strength in the planetary horoscope. Now, how does he know that? Okay, so Yeah, does it have something to do with the relationship of, let us say, a star in the Great Bear, a star in the Pleiades, the one of the zodiacal constellations, and the Earth? That would be a fourfold pattern. And maybe somehow, always, one of the constellations in the zodiac is considered as the rising sign for our particular planet for a particular period of time. Would we say that it is necessarily the age, the sign of the precessional age through which we are passing? I mean, are we to consider that Aquarius is becoming the rising sign of the Earth, or sort of the progressed rising sign of the Earth during this period? Well, we might be able to say that, but Libra is certainly related to Aquarius, and we, you know, it's one of the three air signs, and we're not sure. We're not sure why he says Libra is becoming powerful, or for how long it will become powerful, or whether it's simply part of the fact that an air sign is becoming dominant, namely Aquarius. Anyway, the Tibetan knows something about the casting of the horoscope of the planet, and it would seem to me that he would be a member of this astrological department. In casting the horoscope of the planet, which will someday be possible, it will be found that the line of these forces and our planetary response to them is of more potent effect than the influence of the zodiacal constellations upon the human unit. Well, the zodiacal constellations certainly affect the human unit, and they as well affect the planetary logos, as we have been told. The three great constellations being more powerful, but the zodiacal constellations definitely having a planetary effect, as we read earlier in the text. So let us say the Great Bear, Pleiades, and planetary triangles must be very, very potent if they are to be more potent than the zodiacal constellations, which represent petals in the heart and the head chakra of the one about whom naught may be said. You know, there's a little problem there. What's greater, what's lesser? The Great Bear perhaps represents the seven head centers of the one about whom naught may be said. The Pleiades as a whole perhaps represent the entire head center of the one about whom naught may be said. But then the zodiacal constellations are right in there, in the heart and the head center of the one about whom naught may be said, and it's said to be the major center in the head center. So which is greater? But basically DK is saying that these Great Bear Pleiades and planetary connections have a much greater effect upon the planet than the zodiac has upon us. So we'll just have to take this at face value, and we may take it a little further and ask whether there are not some triangles in our etheric body which have a greater effect upon us, the human unit, than the zodiacal signs have upon us. We always have to use the law of analogy. And basically, in this hierarchical universe, what we have to discover is what is greater and what is lesser. It's a question of magnitude, and we will make very many mistakes if we put a lesser thing in a greater position and a greater thing in a lesser position. But it's not always easy to determine what is greater and what is lesser. Well, anyway, he's saying that the line of forces we've been discussing, which are triangles, are having their very potent effect, and this is due to the immeasurably advanced point in evolution of the planetary spirits. They are planetary logoi who have, in their individual lives, largely transcended the influence of the 12 constellations and are becoming rapidly responsive to the higher vibrations of their great prototypes, the three intimate constellations, as they have been esoterically called, have esoterically been called. So the there's a movement away from, well, let's just say that an elder brother or sister of each one of the planets is a zodiacal constellation. I didn't really mention this the first time I went through this. Every zodiacal constellation, is a greater. Whoops! I just made that disappear. Is a prototype of a planetary logos. But so are the constellation, the stars of the Great Bear and of the Pleiades. So we know that, let's say, Mars is related to Aries. Lord of Aries is related to Mars. They have something in common so that Mars can learn a great deal from the lord of the constellation Aries. But maybe Mars can learn even more from the lord of the constellation of the Great Bear, and through the particular Rishi, which represents a specific relationship with Mars. I'm not saying which one this could be. Maybe it would depend upon the monadic ray or the soul ray, depending on what solar system we're in. You know, our planetary logoi are developing their soul ray particularly now, and not so much their monadic rays, unless we are speaking of the synthesizing planets who are maybe developing their monadic rays. So, you know, we might take a first-rate planet like Vulcan and connect it with the very first star of the Great Bear and say, okay, first-ray soul, Vulcan, is learning more from this particular star, Logos in the Great Bear, Rishi in the Great Bear, than it is learning from, let us say, the lord of the constellation Taurus, with which it is associated. These are very subtle relationships, and we really have to understand magnitude in order to understand them. You know, it's a bit like looking at the human being and say, well, which is more powerful? That's such an important question. Which is more powerful? Is a particular petal in the head center of a human being more powerful? Or is one of the seven head centers more powerful? See, because different planets represent these different seven head centers, and the constellations represent the 12 petals in the heart of the head center of the one about whom, but also in relation to the human being. So in a way, the zodiac is found here in the human being. The heart and the head center is a kind of a miniature zodiac. And the seven planets are found in the subsidiary head centers. So in a way, I just have to say it sometimes looks like the petals in our heart and the head center are somehow more powerful than these isolated head centers, the seven of them. Well, you know, obviously this has to be thought through. I didn't mention any of this particularly in the first go-through of this text, but different things do come to mind. So these planetary spirits are at a huge level of evolution. It has been said that, let us say, for our planetary logos, it is now many Mahakalpas ahead in its development of where a master of the wisdom is. Many Mahakalpas ago, which means, you know, complete solar systems of 311 trillion years approximately, many Mahakalpas ago, our planetary logos was at the place where a master of the wisdom would be. So our planetary logos was equivalent to a master of the wisdom many Mahakalpas ago. So we see by the idea here of the immeasurably advanced point in evolution of these planetary spirits. Well, just imagine if they are that advanced, then how advanced are the lords of the constellations? Yes, or the lords of the great and intimate constellations which are transcendental. So we're dealing, you know, beyond our depth here, but we speculate accordingly, knowing that even if we have a good system in our mind, it has to be filled in by experience over millions and millions of years. So the planetary logoi, then, are in a sense reaching out to the three intimate constellations and to the members of these intimate constellations. They are intimate to what? Well, we might say they are intimate to the one about whom naught may be said. And perhaps they have a very close relation to the structure of the head center of the one about whom naught may be said. The seven head centers, the head center as a whole, the heart in the head center, the jewel in that heart in the head center. Perhaps these three intimate constellations are related to that whole head structure of this super constellational logos known as the unknown on page 293 of Cosmic Fire. Okay, so this is a correspondence in the lives of these great entities to the manner in which, and the great entities, I assume, are the planetary logoi. This is a correspondence to the manner in which an advanced individual, let's say focused in his triad or monad, can offset the influence of the planets and so dominate his personality life. Well, let's just say that if I understand this correctly, these planetary logoi are beginning to focus within the intimate constellations and are thus able to offset some of the influence that the zodiacal constellations have had upon them. Just as the human being who is focusing in his monadic area and his triadal area can perhaps offset some of the influence of the signs upon his life. So in other words, this is a question of focusing in the highest possible area of one's energy system and offsetting a group of lives that had worked through the personality life, and maybe even through the soul life, because at a certain point the soul has to be offset as well. So let's repeat this. This is a correspondence in the lives of these great entities to the manner in which an advanced individual can offset the influence of the planets and so dominate his personality life that prediction and certainty as to activity and circumstance are no longer possible. Now, this is something which maybe I didn't fully understand or fathom in the first read-through of this, but let's say the planets, the planetary logoi, offset the influence of the zodiacal constellations as zodiacal constellations as they reach towards the intimate constellations. Okay. And man focusing in his higher nature offsets the influence of the planets and the factors which rules in the later in the realm of the soul. I think we have to be very careful here with this analogy. But we do know, we are told, that the planetary logoi are moving beyond the influence of the zodiacal constellations per se and into still higher influences. So for the human being, the soul is dominating and the planets cease to condition the life. So we are talking about offsetting the planets, and perhaps we are reaching more into the zodiacal sphere, and eventually the third degree initiate and beyond will be reaching into the sphere of spirit and monad, which is related to the three intimate constellations. Maybe we can, after that, initiation focus on the on some tenuous streams of force from the Great Bear Pleiades and Sirius. So it is with the constellations and the planetary logoi. This, continuing the analogy, they can offset the lower influences. They awaken to and respond to the infinitely higher vibrations of the three major constellations. So, to try to make it simple without the intricacies here, we can offset the planets and they can offset the zodiacal constellations. We're trying to move into the soul power conferred by the zodiacal constellations, and a few of us can move into some streams which are in touch with the intimate constellations. But the planetary logoi in general have a great relationship with the zodiacal constellations and are trying to polarize themselves more completely within the super constellations, of which there are three major. Now, do they have a third degree? They do. And our planetary logos is not an initiate of the third degree. He's not even a cosmic initiate of the second degree. So perhaps when they reach their third degree, they can particularly begin to respond to the superior constellations rather than simply to the zodiacal constellations. Well, you know, we all have teachers in life, and the we could say in a way that the lords of the zodiacal constellations are teaching the planetary logoi, and the lords of the external or exterior or superior constellations are perhaps teaching the zodiacal lords. Although, as I've said, there's some question about which is higher under what circumstance that has to be very carefully thought through, but at least this seems to be the pattern that DK is presenting to us. Now, you know, nothing is ever the same, so I certainly didn't say anything like what I said in the previous number 14, and I'm finding that it probably is not a great idea to go ahead into the discussion of the creative hierarchies. I see I spent a longer time on the section previous to the section on the creative hierarchies. Already 56 minutes have passed, 57 minutes, and so I'm going to leave the creative hierarchies, a bit of a review, for the discussion in Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 15. And I'm hoping and praying that the video on this did take, because I'm just not going to repeat it again. We'll get into that. That will be a very good place to start for number 15. And I've already said, I think, some significant things about the relationship of the fifth, almost liberated creative hierarchy, and the fifth manifested creative hierarchy of solar angels. But I will repeat those things, and hopefully being able to use the tables properly. So let us now sound the great invocation together. From the point of light. Okay, there we go. We will sound the great invocation together, as we always do, as we close these esoteric astrology webinars, remembering that the foremost way of precipitating, hastening, helping the reappearance of the Christ is through the use of the great invocation and the spread of the great invocation. Om. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Om. Om. Okay, friends, thank you for participating in this redo of adventure number 14. But I did emphasize different things. Whether you have the patience to listen to both of them, I don't know. But at least there will be one which has the video. And I did not yet get into the creative hierarchies, which I did in the earlier one, audio. You'll have some information there. And I will begin number 15, with the creative hierarchy is a huge subject, and we must study as well a cosmic fire to penetrate the matter to the small extent that we can. So, farewell for now, and I'll turn off the recording.